Hey there, fourth trimester listeners. Our program today is proudly sponsored by Family Album, your secure haven for sharing baby photos and videos. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, one word, download the app, and start creating a legacy of love, one photo at a time. Hi, I'm Sarah Trott, and welcome to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. I'm a new mama, and this podcast is all about postpartum care for the first few months following birth, the time period also known as the fourth trimester. My postpartum doula, Esther Gallagher, is my co-host. She's a mother, grandmother, perinatal educator, birth and postpartum care provider. Fourth trimester care, our topic, is about the practical, emotional, and social support parents and baby require. And importantly, it helps set the tone for the continuing journey of parenting. This is Sarah Trott here with Esther Gallagher, my co-host on the Fourth Trimester Podcast, and we have a special guest today, Maureen Fura. I want to remind everyone that you can go to our website, which is fourthtrimesterpodcast.com, sign up for our newsletter, sponsor us, look at recipes, look at our resources page. There's a ton of good stuff there, so please check it out if you haven't already. And I just wanted to introduce Maureen briefly. She is the writer and director of a film called The Dark Side of the Full Moon, and it's got a great Facebook page and website. You can check those out as well, but really most importantly, check out the film. And Maureen, we just want to just immediately kind of ask you if you could give yourself a little bit of an introduction as well.
My name is Maureen. I'm very excited to be here. I love this podcast, the idea of this podcast and that you ladies exist, and what a great title, The Fourth Trimester. I made a movie a couple years ago, 2 years ago, and I was just a mom that experienced a mental health complication when I got pregnant, and I slipped through the cracks, and I wondered if what was happening to me was happening to other women, and I found an amazing woman named Jennifer Silliman who slipped through the cracks as well. And we went around the country, we picked up a camera, and we got in our car, and we started interviewing people to see if we were alone. And we found out that many women suffer from this number one complication of childbirth, which is something like pregnancy or postpartum depression, anxiety, and that a lot of care providers, like our doctors, aren't paying attention. They're not really looking for it. They're scared to ask about it. And if we do present with symptoms, they don't know where to send us. So we made a movie about it.
I think that's so brilliant. Yeah. Maureen, are you comfortable telling us a little bit more about how you experienced late pregnancy and early postpartum?
Sure. You know, mine hit the first 2 weeks of conception. It was right. I started feeling like uneasy in my own skin. And even before I found out I was pregnant, an hour before I took the pregnancy test, I had my first suicidal thought. And this had never happened to me. I mean, I was a Peace Corps volunteer twice. I was an AmeriCorps volunteer. I drove cross country several times. Like, things that are scary excite me. So something was wrong. And an hour later, I found out I took a pregnancy test and I found out I was pregnant. And within days, I slipped and I had thoughts about committing suicide once every second. And I couldn't leave the house, and I slipped into a severe depression. I had never felt these feelings before, and I became an agoraphobic. I had to be babysat and cared for like a kid. Like, my husband had to take care of me, my parents, best friend, his mother. I couldn't be left alone, and I kept asking for help. And at my first OB appointment at 6 weeks, I asked, you know, they said, "How are you feeling?" And I said, "I don't feel like myself. I'm really sad." And this was in Monterey, California. And the doctor said, and it was a woman, and she didn't even hesitate. She was like, "You should be happy. You're having a baby."
Right.
And I was just like, I'm waving flags, and I knew, you know, I don't know if I would have been so open if I had had my son, and he was a baby. Like, I think I would have been scared that they would have taken him. Mm-hmm. But because I was pregnant, I told everybody, and I went to 29 care providers before somebody finally was able to help me. So it was like 6 months of just falling to pieces. And I honestly didn't think I was going to make it to the end of the pregnancy. And if I was, I planned on taking my life after he was born, which is a very common, the thought that goes through your mind is he'll be better without me. Like, he can do so much better. It's like a common record that women say when they have postpartum depression.
Yeah.
And pregnancy depression.
Yeah, we've heard that from other guests who have been through similar experiences. In fact, Lisa Abramson, whose podcast we're also going to post during the same Mental Health Awareness Week, had very similar thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's having amazing. Gone through full psychosis, in fact. So 29 different care providers while you were still pregnant?
Yes. And that is like social workers, different counseling centers, OBs, psychiatrists. I was calling everybody. I even called Stanford because I thought they could help me decide if I could take medicine while I was pregnant. They had some kind of center, and the specialist said, "I'm sorry, I can't talk to you. I'd have to talk to your OB." I was like, "Come on, man. Wow. I am suffering here. Like, I need help." And I would ask women who are pregnant, I would say, "Did you ever just wake up one day not yourself?" And I heard from a lot of women that it happened after, but nobody I could find could tell me that something so dramatic happened with the change of hormones right when they got pregnant. And my doctors didn't even know it was possible. They just kept saying, "You have to white knuckle it. You know, you're pregnant. There's nothing we can do." I got the craziest responses. Like, I had ADD. I was told I had such great insurance by community health resources. I was told my insurance wasn't good enough for some. My school, I was in grad school. I had three free psychological consults I could do. And I called them and they said, "Oh, suicide, that's too big. We can't really help you in three visits." And no referrals, just like kind of let me go. So that's really where the movie came from, was like, were these women that you hear about on the news, were they reaching out for help too, and just slipped and just were kind of handed off a bunch of times, you know?
Yeah. Hmm. Did you have a sense of what kind of help you were looking for?
Honestly, I wanted to be put away in a facility until I delivered. I had this idea that if I could just have the baby, I would feel like myself again. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. It was very hard for me to decide to take medicine. But honestly, that was like the turning point in turning down the OCD thoughts. Mm-hmm. And thank God, I mean, the suffering that happened from not taking the medicine, I remember saying to myself, "I wish I had done this sooner." I mean, I was crying. Like, I couldn't leave the bed at all. So, I mean, I wasn't myself anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations for reaching out and asking for help.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think that's like...
That's courageous.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes a lot of energy when you're feeling like the bed is trying to eat you, you know?
Totally. Yeah. I think I was just so frightened of like, I was always that positive person, or I always had like that inner voice that would be like, "It's going to be okay." And for the first time it was gone. And that was just so frightening to think, to have your thoughts tell you it's never going to get better. Like, I didn't even know who I was anymore. So I'm so thankful that I had such good people around me that were holding me together.
Yeah.
Well, not only reaching out for help, but continuing to ask for help.
Yeah. I think that was one of the ways that I healed myself. I felt very guilty about wanting to kill myself. And I think I was like, "Maureen, you wanted to live. I mean, you kept asking for help. You did. You really did want to live."
You did. Yeah. Yeah, I, are there any other, I mean, it's dramatic enough. We don't, you know, there doesn't have to be more, but yeah. I'm just curious if there were other sort of collateral things that you noticed, like being angry at somebody or everybody a lot, or, you know, just any other sorts of manifestations that you felt went along with this that really were maybe smaller, but certainly elemental clues to what you were, you know, the fact that you were having a mental health crisis.
I think the big ones were the extreme anxiety, the crying all the time. I couldn't eat. I dropped weight so fast. I was scared to leave the house. My thoughts kept saying things. It was the what if thoughts. Those are the classic OCD thoughts. What if I, you know, I'm driving the car and I go off the cliff? So then you stop driving. And then what if I drop the bleach in the food when I'm cooking? Okay, then I stop cooking forever. You know, what if I fall asleep and wake up and do something terrible? So then you stop sleeping. So it was like those kinds of things, and they just wouldn't stop. But I didn't have anger. I didn't have the rage that some women talk about. That one didn't hit me.
Yeah. That is, however, a good thing to make note of.
That you
For some of us, just being, you know, angry at everything and nothing all the time.
Yes, that
can be a giveaway to
that rage,
a depressive take. Yeah.
Or not feeling like yourself, or that anxiety. Some women just obsessing about like how many bottles did my baby have? Oh, my baby's not eating. Oh, my baby, like those kinds of things, and you can't sleep. That's a dead ringer for some kind of mood disorder.
Yeah. Yeah. Not sleeping is a big one.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And I also want to say, I just think that you and your friend's name is Jennifer.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, the co-producer. Yes. Yeah.
I just think it's so lovely and brilliant of you to just say, we're grabbing a camera, we're getting in the car. Can you talk about that? And the, you know, sort of like how did you get to where you were when you decided to do that? And then we'll talk about the actual adventure.
It was a destiny kind of moment. I went to her home to film her daughter who has autism, and it was for a company that does ABA therapy. So I'm interviewing her and she's so good on camera. And I was like, you are so good at this. She's like, oh, thanks. I run a group for postpartum depression. And I was like, what? And then I was like, do you want to make a movie?
Yeah.
And she's like, uh-huh. And the one thing about Jennifer, she's a rocket booster. Like you attach her to anything and like you have the Facebook page, the GoFundMe account. You're like, it's all set up within like sounds 3 days.
Sounds like someone I know who's sitting right next to me to my left.
And next thing we know, like we are making a movie. It's happening. Oh my God,
I love this story. Sarah, is this not our story?
Sarah, your rocket booster.
She is. Oh my gosh. She just said, you should do a podcast. And I said, I've always wanted to do a podcast, but, and she goes, we're going to do a podcast. And I'm like, okay, here we go. And a year and a half later, we've been doing a podcast. That's crazy. And if not for her, man, it would have fallen off the radar in a minute. Yeah. So, great. Okay. So that was the moment. That was kismet.
Totally.
But you both had small children, I take it, or at least each one small child.
Yes, I had two. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Now, okay, so before we jump ahead.
Yeah.
Was this your experience with both pregnancies?
No, the second pregnancy, I knew what to look for. I gathered my tribe. I told therapists. I had everybody in line. Mm-hmm. I was on a low dose of sertraline. throughout the pregnancy. I assigned people to watch out for me, and it never happened. It never happened. And I'm so thankful. I just knew what to look for. And I knew what to line up. Like, I say that the biggest thing for maternal mental health is that we should be pushing the postpartum plan. Like, that's what we should be pushing. Instead of the birth plan for a moment, really have your ducks in a row and think about who is going to be there to bring you food and check in on you, and who are your therapists, and who do you need to tell to say, this is what you need to look for.
And while you're at it, like, what do they need to know? Like, what do you need to know about them? If they're a therapist or a psychiatrist,
right?
Like, what is their background and experience? And,
yes,
you know, it's a somewhat new thing. I mean, when I was having babies 39 years ago and really not faring well,
yeah,
there was psychology available.
Yeah.
So far as I know, you know, I would have either been locked up or,
right,
you know, which can still happen, right? And for some people, it might be therapeutic. However, wouldn't it be nice to forego that if possible? Of course.
Definitely. Yeah. That's what, you know, that's the hard thing was, is that what we were finding, and we were talking with people who had babies from 39 years ago, and they were like, we've come so far. And we're like, but we're just everyday women. And this happened to us.
Yeah.
And then we like, we're in the car and we were finding so many women that it was happening to all over the place.
Yeah.
So really, that was,
we
was
haven't
hard.
Come very far.
No, but I
we've
think
got a few more drugs, but we don't necessarily know when and where and how to use them, do we?
No, and our doctors don't really. I think we still have this idea that motherhood just feels so good, and that the idea that it might not is so scary to think about, that we have blinders on as a culture and our professions.
Gosh, well, you, Sarah knows me. Like, this is the moment where I can launch into a feminist rant.
Oh.
And I won't, because people already,
Do it. Do it.
I mean, you know, this default mode of that you experienced of, oh, you should be happy. Everything's going to be okay. At least you have your baby in your arms, you know, blah, 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 blah. As if your experience of all that does not matter. You're just a cipher in the life of a child.
For sure.
So, yeah.
That's I all felt I'm that. Yeah. You know, that happened. And when I got back to Monterey, I went to Los Angeles. I just went everywhere looking for help. And there was a psychiatrist, and I called her. She was in Carmel. I said, I need somebody to, you know, manage this medication I was just put on. I'm like 7 months pregnant. And she's like, I need to talk to your OB before I could ever do that. And the pediatrician of the baby. I was like, I'm just a vessel. Like, I might not make it.
Yeah.
Do you get that?
Yeah. Yeah. Who? Chicken and egg, right?
I like, know.
How's the egg gonna make it if I don't?
I know. I know.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, it's so Western.
Oh, it is. Yeah. It is. And what we found, and a big point that comes out in the movie, is that if this were a lump in our breast, because it's also a mental health thing. We couldn't figure out if it was a mother thing, or if it was a mental health thing, or if it was the two crashing into to each other that made it such a perfect storm. Mm-hmm. But if it were a lump in our breast, a doctor wouldn't turn his head or her head away. They would figure out what to do, and they would acknowledge it. But for this, it's just they look away.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can speak from experience that, you know, it wasn't that long ago that even if it was a lump in your breast, you know, if it was prostate cancer, they'd be all over it. But
so
if it had been a lump in your breast, you might not get treatment in time.
You know, so, I said this in a TEDx talk once that, this has been around since Hippocrates. Like he wrote about it, but something tells me that if this had involved a penis, we would have figured this out so much longer. Like we would have figured this out like 2,000 years ago.
Yeah. And it is a mental health thing because, you know, we're not addressing paternal mental health better, if not for women like Jane Honickman, who, like said, you know, this sucks. Like, we need to deal with this.
Yeah.
But the way that men's depression often manifests is anger and violence.
Yeah.
We know that postpartum women are at very high risk, the highest risk for homicide in America. Why is that? It's because their partners, if those partners are male, are having postpartum breakdowns.
Oh, I never even thought about that.
Sure. I mean, that's how men express depression often, often, not always.
Linked that, but that's very powerful.
I don't think we do. I think it's odd when we do, you know.
No, it's so true. And I know Jane is saying, like, we should change the name. It shouldn't be maternal mental health. It should be paternal.
Parental.
Parental mental health. And I was like, Jane, you are a visionary. You are always on the cutting edge. You're right. You're right. You're like 20 years ahead of your time.
Yeah. And you can imagine the combo package, you know. Right.
Yeah. If both parents, I mean, how set would that child be?
Yeah. So it's sad, but this is where we are. And you've done this amazing film. So tell us about the on the road adventure. I can't wait to hear that part.
So we hit the road. We went to California and San Francisco and Monterey and Boston and Minnesota and Saginaw, Michigan, in the middle of the snowstorms, Florida, and D.C. and Maryland. We went and North Carolina. We went to a lot of places, and we kind of we are grassroots filmmakers. Like, pick up a camera, piggyback trips with family trips. Like, that's and like set up interviews, find a specialist. That's really how the movie was made. And we found so many women who were willing to share their stories about suffering and falling through cracks big time.
Without revealing anything that would be, you know, kind of a privacy issue, how did you find people to talk to?
It was so easy using Postpartum Support International private groups. Jennifer was a PSI coordinator at the time. So one little post and she was able to find people. And then just people I had known in graduate school. One woman called me after she was hospitalized and her baby was taken away. Mm-hmm. And she just had anxiety. And she was like, I think I've been violated. And so we went and filmed her. I mean, women just kept popping up out of the woodwork. Mm-hmm.
I did, by the way, see the movie. It is brilliant. It's beautifully done. And, you know, I mean, this is meant to be an endorsement and I hope I'm correct in it. It's not a scare tactic movie. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, it's just a lovely and truthful and forthright presentation of A, women's stories, B, the issues, because you do a phenomenal job of, you know, documenting the statistics and the, you know, the reality, the broader reality. And I really recommend everyone see this movie. Doesn't matter who you are, 15-year-old boys and girls in high school, you know, like, see this movie. Grandmas, you know, grandpas, like, it's just a lovely, lovely, lovely and hard-hitting, you know, movie.
Yeah. Hey, fellow parents, can we take a moment to reflect on the joyous chaos that is parenthood? You know those days when our hearts swell with love at the sight of our little ones and we're bursting at the seams to share every adorable moment with the world. But let's be real. Some things are better kept in the family, and your loved ones who matter the most aren't always close by, and they might not be that tech-savvy either. So how can you easily share your baby's beautiful growth with loved ones while keeping your precious memories secure? I remember the frustration of trying to use some of the big tech photo solutions, only to find they fell short of what I needed. That's when I stumbled upon something truly remarkable, the Family Album app. The Family Album app was created to give parents a secure and easy way to share photos and videos with loved ones. It's an orderly and totally secure haven for your family's personal memories. I love that there's no third-party ads, no unwanted eyes, unlimited storage, and that it's totally free. So to all the parents who are out there still trying to use other messaging apps for your kids' photos, it's time to level up your family photo game with a free photo sharing app. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, one word, download the app, and start creating a legacy of love one photo at a time.
Yeah, we chose to make it a container of a vehicle to hold all of the stories that popped in the news since we started filming to when we closed. And it's been really hard for people
to
watch.
Great. Yeah.
But I remind, people, that's what it was meant to be, a mirror. It was meant to honor these women, to hold them so that we don't lose them. And this is happening. The stakes are high. We can fix this. It's been fixed in other places. Let's do this. We can do this.
Yeah.
Where can someone go to see the film?
They can go to iTunes or they can go to Amazon, where I think Amazon Prime, you can watch it for free.
Super cool. And then what would you say are the main takeaways from the film or the main messages that really come through?
I think the biggest thing I remember when I was writing the end of it, I was like, what did I really come to say? Like, what did we earn the right to say? And I think it was that motherhood, this is the best kept secret, motherhood doesn't always feel great. And sometimes it's really hard. And sometimes we need help and we need to ask for help. And our providers need to ask us for help and how we're doing and learn how to talk about it. So I think that was the biggest takeaway, is that let's just get really real about motherhood and becoming a mother. It's not always unicorns, and that's okay. And I think as soon as we can marry the light with the dark, I think then we can start to solve the problem.
I agree. And solving the problem isn't making it be unicorns, right? That isn't the solution. The solution is going to be something different. It's going to be, it's going to involve reality.
Right. And it was really about getting everybody on the same page. That was a huge takeaway, is that this is a very sticky, complex, cultural, societal problem. It's a public health crisis, and it's going to take everybody at the table to solve it. And I think the one thing that your listeners can take away is that there's, let's ask the moms in our life, the new moms and the old moms, instead of just focusing right on baby all the time, let's take a moment and bring it back to her and say, how are you really feeling? How are you really doing? How are you sleeping? How are you eating? Do you know 1 in 7 women, it might not feel good. And just having those open conversations with women, asking them, how are you doing? Your baby's cute, but how are you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how are things with your partner?
Oh my gosh.
Because it's a big thing. If they're your primary, if everyone's considering them your primary support person, and they're having a difficult time,
so hard.
Whatever the difficulty, whether it's they had to go back to work or they've pretty much lost their emotional center. Right?
Totally.
All of these are stressors, everything in between. So
I think that's one of the things that came out in the movie, was that we're having babies in a very different way than we've ever had them in the span of human history. Mm-hmm. We're having them very isolated. We want to be independent, but we're having our babies without family members around and tribes and help. And if one of you is suffering, it's going to make it so hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That kind of brings us back to something you said earlier around, instead of having a birth plan, what would it look like to have a postpartum plan?
Yes.
So what do you think that looks like?
It is lining up, thinking about who can you call when your husband is out, you have to drive baby, you're not feeling great, or you need to go to the doctors, but you can't drive. Who are those people you're going to call? And it's also who are you going to ask to maybe pick up some groceries, or are you going to try to do a grocery delivery service? And, you know, instead of thinking about all of the bottles and what brand stroller you're going to get, it's like, who's the maternal mental health therapist you can call? And where's that postpartum doula? And who's that baby nurse if you're really having a hard time? And where's that support group located, and the mom circle, and getting all of that together and having people know what to look for. I mean, just getting somebody to come into your home and to bring you groceries or to cook for you. You know, I think that's what we should be giving women instead of another onesie is, yeah. I'm going to cook for you every Tuesday. I'm going to bring you a lasagna. You know what I mean? Like, that's what they need.
Not lasagna. Sorry. Everyone's heard me say it 100 times, like, not lasagna. But yes, food.
And I say, like, I mean, if you live in a city, it's easy. But here we have, you know, a grocery service.
Yeah.
Going grocery shopping with your baby is like torture. It's so hard, and driving is scary. And, you know, I would invest in that. And I would really think of different things to invest in to make it really easy. Because other countries have the 40 days that you're not allowed to leave the house, you know?
So they're obligated to take care of you.
Yes. You know? Yeah. Aunties are there.
And they do. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that's what we need more than all this prep for this one moment that's like less than 12 hours long.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to add to that, thinking about your friend circle and choosing a friend doesn't have to be your closest friend, and maybe shouldn't be, but somebody that you feel close enough to that has managed to develop compassion over empathy, meaning they're not going to come to your house, ask you how you are, and when you say, I'm having scary thoughts, is going to go, oh yeah, I know what you mean. It's really scary, right? They're going to say, okay, here's what we're going to do, right? And you've talked to that person in advance. You've come up with a game plan with them. And they know what to do, right? They know to call your psychotherapist and your psychiatrist and your OBGYN and say, you know, Esther's having some real challenges and it's time for us to engage and see what we can do to help her get back on track sooner rather than later, right?
For sure. Because, oh, you're so right.
You know, I mean, who has that? But I do think that we probably have a friend here or there that we could cultivate that relationship with. And who knows that they're going to call or visit and check in with you on day one, day three, day five, day seven.
Wouldn't that be so nice if we all had like a mom keeper, like somebody who would do that?
Yeah.
Just be like, okay, how you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everything's.
That's so awesome. Yeah, we've talked about that in the past, right? The mothers who need mothers.
Yeah.
Oh.
The moms need a mom. We need somebody to step in and help out. And Esther, what you're saying about having someone check in, I think, you know, a lot of friends aren't necessarily going to feel like it's their place or necessarily have the right information at hand to give that help. So I think what's key about what you're saying is preparing them in advance.
Yeah, right. It is key. And even the most well-meaning friends can say the thing that just crushes you. I mean, that was my experience with my second child, was like the one person that I thought I could say my worst thought to did what you experienced at the doctor's, which was like, oh, it's going to be okay.
Oh.
And I adore this person, but like,
yeah,
they didn't have, of all my friends, one would have thought they would have been the most prepared and they weren't. And part of the reason they weren't is because our culture was so less prepared.
Sure.
But there are mental health checklists, you know, you can find one and bring it home and, you know, ask your OBGYN, like,
I want a copy of your mental health checklist that you are supposed to go over with all of your clients at their 6-week check. Because I want somebody checking in on me way before I'm 6 weeks postpartum.
Right.
You know? So, you know, these things are, have actually been created out in the world. And I think we should commandeer them.
Why don't we post one on our Facebook page and our website as part of this episode?
That's a great idea.
And I have a great handout from Postpartum Support Virginia on creating a postpartum plan worksheet. And it's phenomenal.
Oh, okay.
And I can give it to you. I'll give you the link. It's great. I wish I had it.
We will share it. Yes. And I will just say to all of that, like people out in the world, I don't care if you're a man, a woman, a 4-year-old, if you can read, get this thing, memorize it, and ask nice ladies that you see that are pregnant and postpartum how they're doing.
For sure. I love that. I love just knowing you can be I love that message.
Yeah. That's culture change.
Yes. Right? Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. It gives me chills.
Could you imagine a 4-year-old little boy walking up to you and saying,
"How you doing?
I noticed that you're pregnant. Have you been having any scary thoughts?"
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice.
I think that might be really scary for some people.
It might be, but you know. But wouldn't it be great if we lived in a world where we could expect that from a 4-year-old? I mean, what a different world that would be.
Well, yeah.
You know, where everybody was concerned in a positive way,
mm-hmm.
right? In a, okay, this is normal. Let's do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just...
Instead of the, are you going to have a vaginal birth? Are you going to do a C-section? Are you going to take drugs? Yeah.
Right.
How you feeling? How you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. Or have the expectation that that might be something that someone gets out of a mommy group.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just about making friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, a big part of it is making friends and having those connections and having people to talk to. But but to get that kind of support.
Yeah.
It's not just about buying the onesie for someone.
Imagine having the first 20 minutes of your mommy group being spent going over the checklist.
Oh.
And anybody who needs to can raise their hand and say, yeah,
that's nice.
It's hard to admit it, but you know, this is how I'm feeling. And I could really use some non-judgmental support in getting some good help. Does anybody have a referral?
That sounds so good.
Yeah.
I love that. Asking exactly for what you need. That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's get that into every class. Prenatal yoga.
Yeah.
So, Maureen, are you familiar enough with that that postpartum list? I know we talked about some of the questions, but is there anything else from that that we'd want to highlight to our listeners of things to think about for your postpartum plan?
I think the postpartum plan is great. I think, educating yourself about how you know, checking in with yourself, how you feel. I was looking up apps that could help. There's an app that, and I'll have to try to find it to give to you, but where people can sign up to help you with stuff. Like take another one of your kids to school because if you have more than one, that's a huge stressor. Or if husband is working long distance, somebody to come in and just sit with you or, you know, help you or take you grocery shopping. It's, you know, you kind of want to still do your stuff. So I'll find this app. But
There's a website. It may still be out there. I'm almost positive it is. It was called Many Helping Hands. You know, so maybe they've created an app out of that website, but it was a good one. And, you know, it wasn't specific to pregnancy. You know, if you were going through cancer treatment or, you know, whatever, right? It was just a good all purpose. You could say what you need in a paragraph and then, you know, turn it over and somebody else could be in charge of it for you even. Like they can be the coordinator. What you know, that
coordinates the friends. But anyway, yeah, that's a great idea.
I think that would be great if we can move into that space of, I don't need to buy you, you know, another thing. But I can help you. I can order you food to be delivered. Like, yes. I can do that. Yeah.
I mean, and actually, I know there's the whole lasagna thing, but a lasagna might be better than nothing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sarah knows I'm so strong about maternal nutrition that I tend to go, oh, not another lasagna. But
one of my best meals that someone brought me during my postpartum was they brought over a cast iron skillet and it had like the chicken that was cooked in it.
Yeah.
And they brought over like mashed potatoes to go with it. And it was so tasty. And it felt so extremely thoughtful to just be presented with like the dish that it was cooked in and the food and the love that went
so
into that.
Nice.
Oh,
yes.
So good.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so nice. That's a good question to ask people. Like, what was your best postpartum meal delivered to you?
Oh, yeah.
To get people thinking, I didn't receive one or I should be giving one.
My best prenatal meal, hopefully this won't make anybody nauseous, but was organic lamb's liver with some beet greens. And I mean, it was very iron and, you know, vitamin rich. And I love that kind of thing. So in the midst of living with somebody who was a vegetarian, this was like dying and going to heaven for me. So, yeah.
You could definitely tell you're from San Francisco.
Well, at the time I was living where I grew up, which is in a rural Northern California town called Los Molinos. Yeah.
Oh.
So, I wasn't a city girl at all, and especially not at the time. But yeah, no. I grew up on, you know, animals raised in the backyard and stuff like that. So
it sounds really nice.
Yeah, it was. Totally was. Yeah. I always say that if I was going to be pregnant again, I would have my dad be my postpartum doula. And I just would have him cook for me. And I'd make him hold the baby because he's a little afraid of newborns, which is silly. He had four of them. I'd make him hold the baby.
Oh,
yeah.
I think that's one thing I would say is invest in, if you're going to invest in something, get a postpartum doula. Yeah. Cause it's very, especially for your first baby, it's very overwhelming. There's a lot of fear. You don't, you know.
And when you interview her, ask her, how will you be taking care of me?
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
And how will you specifically take care of me?
Mm-hmm.
Because some doulas really are baby focused. I will say that, you know, and it's not, there's nothing wrong with that. However, we're talking about moms here and moms need care as well. So
yes, that's a great question.
And partners, of course.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Great. Well, any final thoughts for our listeners, Maureen?
I hope you have a great fourth trimester. Make sure you ask for help if you're not feeling like yourself. There's help out there, and if you get the right help, you can get better really fast.
Great.
Great.
We echo the message, and we welcome everyone to look at the film. Good educational resource for anyone who's thinking about getting pregnant or has a little one. And we'll post all the information on our website, including the postpartum plan, which is so awesome. We do have a birth plan template, which is like a wish list, right? Because whose birth plan goes exactly as planned? I mean, that's nice. That's a really nice idea.
We call it intentions.
Intentions, yeah. So, I mean, kudos to everyone who had it go the way they
expected, right?
But just putting it out there, it's a template. It's a guideline. But yeah, so we'll post all the information. Thank you again, Maureen, for being on our program. Dr. Shosh, who's also a guest on our show, was one of your, someone involved, I think, as an executive producer.
Yeah.
We're just so honored to have you as a guest on our program, and we are so thrilled about the work that you're doing. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This has been so wonderful. A great opportunity.
Yes, our deep pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You can find out more about Esther Gallagher on esthergallagher.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast in order to hear more from us. Thank you for listening, everyone, and I hope you'll join us next time on the fourth trimester. The theme music on this podcast was created by Sean Trott. Hear more at soundcloud.com/SeanTrott. Special thanks to my true loves, my husband Ben, daughter Penelope, and baby girl Evelyn. Don't forget to share the fourth trimester podcast with any new and expecting parents. I'm Sarah Trott. Goodbye for now.
Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing all that you can. I wrote this song, simple and true. I wrote this song, I'll sing a song for you. You got your wheels, you got your gears. You ride around town without any fear. You got your pedals, you got your brakes. You always wear your helmet for safety's sake. Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing all that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you. Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing the best that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you.